You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Look at all you phonies out there, you posers, all of you sheep counting till infinity, counting sheep. Pfft. What if I told you there was more there, like more than you can count? But what would a sheeple like you know about more than infinity than you could count? Pfft. You probably don't even know about infinity. So like, what does it mean to count until infinity? What does it mean to count more? And like, where do dimensions fall in all this? All this and more on this episode of Breaking Math. Episode 56, More Sheep Than You Can Count. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Gabriel.
And this is Breaking Math. Let's start off with some plugs.
Yeah, the plug that you often hear very frequently because it's so worth it is our Breaking Math poster, which is essentially a 30,000-foot view of the entire field of tensor calculus. Basically.
Which is used a lot in non-Euclidean mathematics, especially in...
Einstein's relativity. In general.
General relativity.
In fact, that's there's even a section on the poster that has that. So it's an awesome gift. What excites me about this poster, and I think I've said this before, is I used to go to the bookstore of my alma mater, and they had all of these tutorial little card foldouts that essentially had all of the major concepts and everything from trigonometry to calculus one to everything, even finance. Yet they only had those for the introductory and undergraduate courses. This is kind of like that, but for a graduate level physics and math course. At least that's how I like to think of it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool if you like Einstein, if you like vectors at all, if you like cool illustrations that look kind of sci-fi.
Yes.
You might want to spend $15.15 plus $4.50 shipping and handling in the United States for a tensor poster, and you could get that on our Facebook poster store, which is at facebook.com/breakingmathpodcast, and you just click on shop. Let's say you want to support us monthly. If you support us for $1 or more a month, that comes out to what, like 3 cents a day? You could have ad-free episodes. You could have the outlines that we use for the episodes, which have the stuff organized pretty well. If you support us with more than pi to the e dollars, which is $22.46, we'll get you a poster too. And, now we're allowing people from overseas to print the poster themselves, because we want to share in the goodness with everyone.
Yeah, and actually, I actually really like that. I mean, I know that some people may advise against doing that, but so now if you live overseas, you also have access to our poster. Just send us an email, and we'll work out those arrangements for how exactly we do it.
Message us on the Patreon or email us, and what's our email again? It is breakingmathpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep. Also, we have a Twitter handle @BreakingMathPod.
And contact us on both of those if you have ideas for episodes, questions about episodes. We're on there pretty frequently, trying to build more of a relationship with you, the audience.
Yes.
We also have a website that needs dire updating, but has some pretty cool apps on it called BreakingMathPodcast.app.
Yes, .app. So just go to http://BreakingMathPodcast.app, and there is a 3D interactive hypercube that you can modify and add more or fewer dimensions. I think that's the coolest thing in the world. I just think that you need a song to go with it, like maybe Indigata Devita or something,
We could have the Hypercube song. Hypercube, it's not just a cube, it's a hypercube.
That too. Yeah. I don't know. It's like it's mesmerizing in the same sense that like a lava lamp is, but a lava lamp.
Oh yeah,
is...
no. I have embarrassingly stared at my own code for like 20 minutes one time because it was like undulating.
So you can literally go there right now and with your controls on a desktop. Unfortunately, it doesn't work with a phone yet. But
yeah, we're getting everything worked out with our domain.
Yes, all the things. With your keys, you can add dimensions. You can have a 5-dimensional or a 6-dimensional hypercube and change the colors too. It's really cool. So check it out. Check it out. And I know that this is, I don't mean to take the plug section too long, but if you have a moment, we'd really appreciate you seeing our sister show on YouTube. We have a guest who has made an appearance on a few episodes named Dr. Alex Alaniz, and he has a physics and math YouTube show that I'm also a part of called the Turing Rabbit Holes podcast, named after Alan Turing. And we currently have, I think, between 400 and 500 subscribers. So it's kind of a bit of a small channel, but we are putting our whole heart into it. So if you could check that out, give us a like and subscribe. We would love that too. Thank you very much.
So what are we talking about today? We're talking about cardinal infinities, obviously, right?
Yes, yes. Now, you said it, infinities. I love the title, if I may, real quick. The title of the show is More Sheep Than You Can Count. Obviously, that's an allusion to infinity. I love it. It's a fantastic
and
title.
And the reason why we chose that is because there are sets of things, collections of things that cannot be counted. And I mean that in a very real sense, like not even all the real numbers, right? Like one, not real numbers, all the natural numbers, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. You can count all of them, mm-hmm. theoretically. They are called countable because you can put them all in a list that has the first item at the first place, the second item at the second place, on and cover all of them. There are some sets you cannot do that with, and one of those sets is the set of real numbers, and we'll show why on here, but basically, you cannot list all the real numbers in any way, shape, or form. You will always leave things out. Yeah. If you have any list, no matter if it's infinitely long.
There's some really nuanced facts about infinity, and that what we've realized in the field of mathematics in the last 200 years. One thing I love about this episode, though, is I got especially interested in this topic when I taught sixth grade math. And what's cool is we're going to get into this in a little while, but we had to do these Socratic seminars at the school I taught at. It was a charter school. And the kids started exploring infinity completely on their own. And they had these open group discussions that got into this. And what I found wonderful is there's absolute overlap between some of their discussions. Like, I think one of the topics that was brought up was, does a circle have the same amount of points as a sphere? And, you know, yes, I kid you not that we had sixth graders talking about this in a Socratic discussion. Not everything was maybe, you know, correct in that discussion, but
most of it touches on the kind of cardinal infinities that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
For example, the answer to the question of does a circle have the same amount of points as a sphere? Surprisingly is yes, and we will find out why.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Gabriel, tell us a little bit more about the Socratic discussions, and we'll go along and kind of talk about how each concept maybe relates to cardinal infinities.
Oh, I'd love to. Okay, yeah, again, this part excites me because I've never, ever done something quite like this in a school. The school I taught at, you guys can Google search it, it actually has won a lot of awards. The school is called Cottonwood Classical Preparatory School. A little shout out to my old school where I taught at for a while. And it is a charter school as a charter school, they do things a little bit differently, you know, whether it's curriculum or even the, you know, the time of day that they start with. Well, with this charter school, one of the things they wanted to include was Socratic dialogue. So written into the charter, every single class, whether it's history or humanities or an art class or even mathematics. There was a time, I think we tried for every 2 weeks, roughly. It didn't always happen, but that was the original goal. Every 2 weeks on a Friday in our math class, we would move all of the desks out of the way and move all of the chairs into sort of an oval, so to speak. And there would be a subject that was either introduced by a student or it could even be a quote or perhaps something, you know, if you're just getting started off, the teacher might, but really it's quite student led. There'd be a quote on the board and the students just had to discuss it kind of in a popcorn style, and it's open ended. So in a mathematics course, there was a lot of philosophical quotes that we found on numbers. I think we found some quotes from Friedrich Nietzsche on numbers. We would always put like a quote from Nietzsche or other philosophers that had something to do with mathematics, and the students would explore it. During one particular session, a question came up, and I don't remember who it was from, but the question arose, does a circle have zero angles or infinity angles? What a fabulous question. Initially, I think when I was younger, I would definitely say zero angles. But as the discussion went, you know, I mean, can you see how somebody might say infinity?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought about this a lot when I was a kid, too, because, I mean, you look at the progression from triangle to square, And you notice it looks more circle-like and the angles get shallower and shallower. Mm-hmm. And so this question of how many angles does a circle have?
You could almost say infinity. I mean,
yeah. And the question though is like, which type of infinity too? Because we're going to talk about countable and countless infinities. And it turns out that a circle has an uncountable infinity of different points. And if each point has an angle that can be associated with it, then you can definitely say that a circle has infinite angles.
Yeah. Now there's more relevant things that came about from this rich, rich conversation on this day. And again, as I said earlier, it was a dialogue with sixth graders. So not everything was rigorously defined, but that misses the beauty of it, I think, you know?
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I'm just touching on the fact that these questions do have a real ways of looking at them. And because they are such common questions, I mean, these sixth graders had them, I had them at an early age.
Yeah.
I think it's good to go into their answers.
Yeah. And real quick, so in this episode, we're going to discuss, the history of countable and uncountable, and introduce some terminologies. But before we do that, I just want to say a few more things that came up during that conversation. Not all of them, but a few more things. it was amazing. I had kids come to me the week after and say, "Mr. Hesch, I was thinking about last week's conversation over the weekend, and I think that in some ways, zero and infinity are kind of the same thing, you know." And I was just like, wow, this is crazy. And
which is a very common mathematical intuition as well, in a cool way. Like mathematicians, you look at something that a pattern that occurs with zero and one, a good place to look next is infinity.
Yeah.
And just all these like fascinating things show the human intuition and the human strive for infinity. And I think that what it comes from is, I mean, if I eat breakfast every day, I can imagine very easily eating breakfast forever. The word drip and dribble are related in Old English in this similar way. To drip, it means to drip once. To dribble means continuously drip. So the idea of continuity, I mean, I don't think it's any coincidence that that differential and integral calculus would have to do quite a bit with the concept of this kind of continuity also deal with infinities.
Alrighty. Now, before we get into a few deeper concepts, we'll review ordinal infinities versus cardinal. So, ordinal numbers are for assigning unique numbers to collections of sets and things like that.
Yeah, so if I have two copies of all numbers next to each other and I want to give them a unique address, I have to use ordinal infinities. Yeah. However, we know that they have the same amount of items, and this amount that we're talking about is the cardinality. So the cardinality is like, how big is a set? And so here's an interesting thing, an interesting paradox, and I think it's due to Gauss, I believe.
Wrong.
No, is Gauss or Hilbert?
Nothing.
I can't quite remember. I'll put that in the show notes.
Sure. You lose.
But the number of integers is the same as the number of squares.
That is wild. That grates on one's intuition. At least I think it
will. Yeah, right, because you seem like you're skipping things. It's like, how can they have the same number? And the reason why is because every number, 1 squared is 1, right?
Yes.
2 squared is 4.
Yep.
3 squared is 9. Every number has a square.
Yes.
And every square is different.
Correct. Okay. Oh my goodness. That's still wild. Because one can also say truthfully that in any finite set, oh, no, that's not true. I was going to say, you can erase that too. In any finite set, there's fewer squares than there are, but that's...
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, it only works on infinite sets, and that's where we get these weird paradoxes. So we need to define things in a way that is a little bit more concrete. And so that's why we say that two sets have the same cardinality if there is a function that is both injective and surjective that maps one to the other. So let's talk about what a function is really quick, right?
And we're also going to talk about later what exactly injective and surjective mean, because those are very important terms here.
Yeah, so let's say that the function that we're dealing with is somebody's social security number. It's a number in the United States that's used to uniquely identify people. Mm-hmm. So the domain of the function that maps a person to their social security number will be the domain of all people, right, in the United States.
Yes.
The codomain is the set of all social security numbers. Mm-hmm. So what is injectivity? Injectivity means that it maps different elements from its domain to different elements of its codomain. So let's take this this function, right, this social security function. If two people are different, will they have different social security numbers?
Yes.
That means that the set is injective. And the same thing happens with the squares, right? If two numbers are different, different than their squares are different.
Yes.
Now let's talk about surjectivity. It's kind of the opposite of injectivity. So a set is surjective if every element of its codomain, so what's being mapped to, mm-hmm. has some element that maps to it from the domain.
Okay.
So it means that, so let's look at our social security function. If we have a social security number, is there a person to go along with that number?
Yes, there is.
Meaning that the function is surjective.
Mm-hmm.
So if a function is both surjective and injective, it's kind of a one-to-one and onto thing, right?
Yes.
Meaning that they have the same number of sets. And that works for the square function, because the square function, if you map every number 1, 2, 3 to squares, you're not going to skip a square, right?
Correct.
So that is how you tell if two numbers have the same cardinality. You create a function that maps between them.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. And again, so you say injective, meaning that each person will map to one unique social security
number? Yeah. Like if two people are different, then their social security numbers will be different.
Okay. And that means injective. Very
good.
Okay.
And surjective means that for every social security number, there's at least one person to go along with it.
Okay, and there's one unique as well, right?
No, surjective doesn't have to be unique.
Oh,
but okay. Injective plus surjective means it's unique.
Oh, got it. Okay, very good.
That's why both conditions have to exist.
Okay. All right, now we'll go into a little more depth into cardinal infinities specifically.
So what is so let's say we want to have a symbol, right, for the cardinality of the set of all natural numbers. That's a cardinality of 1, 2, 3 through infinity, or like 1, 2, 4, 1, 4, 9, 16, you know, all the squares.
Mm-hmm.
Anything countable all has the same infinity. Anything countably infinite is what it's called.
Okay.
And it has, in the term for this is aleph not, which is a little aleph symbol, which is a Hebrew character with a little zero written next to it. And that is a cardinality of the set of all natural numbers. So how can we show or not show that the cardinality of natural numbers is equal to or not equal to the set of all real numbers?
I'd say an inductive proof where you... I don't know.
Well, there is an inductive proof for it, but I'm getting at the idea that we would have to show that a function exists that is both injective and surjective to show that they have the same cardinality,
okay.
Or show that no such function exists to show that they have different cardinalities.
Okay, very good.
So we're going to have to prove a couple of lemmas. The space from 0 to 1... Right?
Mm-hmm.
I claim in the real numbers has the same cardinality as a space from negative infinity to positive infinity.
Mm-hmm. And that's your lemma. I love that word, lemma. That's like also a claim, so to speak. Like a mini.
Yeah, it's like a mini proof.
Cool. And then here we have the proof to your lemma that the space from 0 to 1 has the same cardinality as a space from negative infinity to positive infinity. And we start...
by identifying a function, right?
Yep.
And the function that we... that it's honestly arbitrary, but one function that works is ln of x over 1 minus x and
mm-hmm.
quantity, which is negative infinity at 0, 0 at 1 half, and positive infinity at 1.
Let me say that one more time. So one of the functions... is the natural log of the quantity, it's a fraction, x over 1 minus x. Okay, I'm following.
Yeah, and this function happens to be strictly increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that if it's strictly increasing, we know it must be injective, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Because that means that every number will have a different number associated with it.
Okay.
And we also know that it has every number from negative...
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa.
Yeah.
Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan.
Yeah.
No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Infinity to positive infinity because it's a continuous function,
mm-hmm.
and we see that it approaches negative infinity at 0, 0 at 1 half, and positive infinity to 1. So it sweeps all the way through all the natural numbers,
yes.
I mean all the real numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so since this function exists, we know that those two have the same cardinality.
Mm-hmm.
So now any claims that we make about the cardinality of the space between 0 and 1 can be made about the cardinality of all real numbers, which is actually does us a big favor.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're going to do a second lemma. Let's say I have a set of real numbers between 0 and 1. So they all start with 0 dot, right? 0 point.
Sure.
And they have an infinite number of digits after them. They can, a lot of them can be zeros, but there's an infinite number because they're real numbers, right?
Okay, sure. Like pi or whatever.
Yeah, maybe one's... like pi minus 3, you know? Like they're all numbers between 0 and 1.
Sure.
So I claim, and this is the second lemma, that if we have a set of these, right, no matter how big the set is, we could always find a number that is not in that set.
Okay.
And all we have to do is change one digit at a time.
Okay.
So what we do is we create a number that changes the first digit of the first number to something else, because then it won't be the same as that number, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Just like add 0.1 or add any arbitrary change to it.
Yeah, like change 0.13592 to 0.23592.
Yep.
And then so the second number might match this new number that we're creating. However, we're not going to let it, because we're going to take its second digit. So let's say it's 0.123. Mm-hmm. We're going to take that 2, we're going to change it to something. It doesn't matter what we change it to. We can change it to 3. But all we have to do is we have to change it to something that won't match the second number.
Okay.
And we could do that to every number, right, in the set.
Yes.
And this new number that we come up with will not be any of those natural numbers. I mean, any of those real numbers.
Okay, yes.
So that means that any set that we have, we could choose a real number that isn't in that set.
Okay, wow. And therefore, that has some significance then for real numbers.
Yeah, because what it means is that the set of all real numbers is uncountably infinite, because you can make this thing arbitrarily large. So that means that any countable set of these things, which is like what it means to be able to go through them one at a time, mm-hmm. you'll always be able to generate a number that is not within the set, no matter how many numbers you have.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is the proof that first of all, the number of real numbers is uncountable. Mm-hmm. And second of all, that the infinity is infinitely greater than Aleph naught.
Okay.
And we call this cardinality Aleph 1.
Wow. So let me read these three bullet points again, if I may.
Yeah.
So as you said earlier, just to sum this up, the set of all real numbers is uncountably infinite. And this proof here says, since you can always make a new number from any set of numbers, that means that any countable or countably infinite set of real numbers cannot contain every number. That's crazy, even though it's infinite. Wow.
Yeah, which means that we cannot put the real numbers in any order that will fill, we'll always have gaps.
Yeah, because if that were the case, then a new number could not be made from them, which is a contradiction. And since the space from 0 to 1 has the same cardinality as the real numbers, that means that the real numbers are uncountably infinite. As you said earlier, that's...
Yeah, because we have an injective and surjective map between them, right?
Yes, yes. Oh, wow. Ooh, goodness, mind blower.
I know, it's fun though, right?
Yeah, yes, fun.
So fun.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the proof, and it's called a Cantor's diagonalization argument, and it was created in the 1870s. Actually, it was 1891.
Oh, okay, very good. Now we have another one called space-filling curves.
So here's the thing. We have Aleph naught, right, which is the cardinality of the natural numbers or the fractions, right?
Yes.
Any one of those, because you could count all the fractions as we showed in the last episode. Mm-hmm. And then cardinality, and then Aleph 1 is the cardinality of the real numbers, right?
Yes.
So you might think that there's some Aleph 2 that's the cardinality of the plane, Aleph 3 for 3D space, and so on. Mm-hmm. Well, Cantor, our friend Cantor, in 1879 proved actually that the plane, the 3D space, 4D space, any dimension of space has the same cardinality as the real numbers.
Wow.
And the way that he did it, he did it in 1879 with the infinity hotel argument, which we talked about in the last episode for a different reason.
Okay.
But in 1890, he created a discovery which is used today in research actually called space-filling curves to answer this question. And what a space-filling curve is imagine you scribble on a piece of paper, right?
Okay.
And let's say the scribble cannot touch itself, right?
Yes.
And instead of a scribble, it's like yarn that we're pushing onto a piece of paper.
Okay.
And theoretically, we could actually have the yarn be so twisty that it actually goes through every point.
Okay.
Now, since it goes through every point, it means that it is a surjective function, right?
Mm-hmm.
And since every point has a unique point associated with it, it is injective.
Yes.
Meaning that there's an injective and surjective map between the unit line and the space-filling curve. Mm-hmm. Meaning that the plane and the line and the Cube all have the same cardinality, okay. Which to me is pretty mind-blowing.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Okay, say that one more time. Hold on a second. So when you say cardinality, the points that are contained.
Yeah, basically what I'm saying is you could squiggle through every... There's a way that has been defined to squiggle through every number in the space where X and Y are between 0 and 1. And so basically, since you could squiggle through all that with a space-filling curve, you can... it has the same cardinality as the real numbers because there is a one-to-one and onto function, a surjective and injective function.
Wow, that's pretty mind-blowing. Goodness, that's using some formal terminology, but that's still pretty wild. Now, I'm glad that we prefaced this next section on the discussion on space-filling curves because the conversation that transpired with my sixth graders during that Socratic dialogue on circles and infinity touched on a lot of these things. And I don't think at the time anyone realized it. This section we call sphere weirdness.
Our outline.
Yes. And we'll discuss a few other things here. Let me see here. So during the conversation on circles and infinity, we started off by talking about whether a circle has a zero or an infinite amount of angles. And we entertained the idea that it has an infinite amount of angles. There were other discussions as well that happened both during that Socratic seminar and the weeks following with students who discussed with me during my office hours that I'm now aware of. So one of the students had said, imagine if you have two circles and these circles are empty circles. So,
yeah, circles on a piece of paper, right? Or some kind of 2D plane, right?
Correct. And, you know, so, yeah, so we say that they are hollow, I suppose, two-dimensional circles, but they're hollow.
Yeah, two-dimensional circles, and those are also known as one-spheres, yes. Because their surface is one-dimensional, and their surface is all we're caring about right now.
Yeah, yeah. And the discussion went something like this. Imagine two of these circles, and you're holding them in your hand, and they're flat. When they're not touching, this is, you know, obvious, you know, they touch at no points. But when they touch... They touch at one point. They're tangent at one point.
Yeah, when they barely first start touching.
Yes, yeah, like they kiss. If you were to kiss the circles, it's at one point. Now, if you were to overlap the circles partially, not all the way, but partially, how many points do two circles partially overlap at? Two, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like you've got you now have 2 points. You know, in. You could even draw a straight line through them. You don't have to, but you now have 2 points. Now, if the circles are the exact same size, if you keep moving the circles until they perfectly overlap, one circle perfectly overlaps on the other, it looks like you only have one circle, how many points do the circles overlap at?
And we actually have an answer with this now.
Yes.
And here's the thing, because the points that they overlap at, if you take a circle, right, and you unpeel it, it's like a straight line, right?
Correct.
Meaning that it has the same cardinality as a straight line.
Correct.
Because any homeomorphism like that will imply usually a one-to-one and onto function.
Yep.
And so you could say that there are aleph 1 points that they overlap at. The cardinality of their overlap is aleph 1. Correct. So it goes from 0 to 1 to 2 to aleph 1.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Now, of course, we didn't use the term aleph 1 in that dialogue. We just talked about, you know, some students said, oh, is it an infinite point? Or how about just we say all points? And during the conversation, we agreed that all points was the preferred term, as it's not scary like infinity is scary.
Yeah. Yeah, and here's the thing too, though, is that like once we have these concrete ways of dealing with infinities, like aleph naught and aleph one, instead of just like infinity being like this nebulous, faraway thing, we get more comfortable with talking about the infinite. Yes. And I think that's a cool thing about math is being able to parcel these incredible concepts into like tiny symbols.
Yeah, and this is also me, you know, applauding this approach of a Socratic discussion, you know, where it's graded on participation points, you know, but we didn't grade it on like correctness. So I think it's a really cool thing. Now, the conversation gets weirder. Just hang tight because it gets much, much weirder. To review to where we are now, we start with two circles and, you know, they're empty. They're not solid circles. They're just flat circles. Apart, they touch at no points. Touching, 1 point. Overlapping, 2 points. Completely overlapping, aleph 1, infinity points, or all points. Now, let's try this again, but this time with spheres. If you have two spheres that are empty, and what are those called?
Like two spheres, because their surface is two-dimensional, and we only care about the surface.
Yeah, so it's not filled like a bowling, like a billiard ball. It's empty, like a shell. So you have two spheres, and they don't touch at no points at all. They touch at one point, like if they kiss, then if they partially overlap, here's the question. If you have two spheres that partially overlap, how many points do they partially overlap at?
And you'll notice about this is that those two circles will overlap at a ring that is where they touch, right?
Yes.
And we've discussed earlier, a ring has Aleph 1 points, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Now, and I know where you're going with this, the two spheres are now going to completely overlap, correct?
Yes, two spheres that are the same size completely overlap at how many points?
Yeah, and here's the thing, because we can unpeel a sphere, stretch it out so that it's on the 1x1 square, we know that that has the same number of points as Aleph 1, right?
Correct.
So the sequence here goes that the spheres touch at no points, then they touch at 1 point, then they touch at Aleph 1 points, and then they continue touching at Aleph 1 points. Even though there's an infinite number of these rings that they now touch at, it is still the same cardinality.
That blows my mind. That absolutely blows my mind. It's just insane. So, you know, and it's interesting because they're even different dimensions. You know, when the two spheres partially overlap and they form that ring or that 2D flat circle, if you will, that's an infinity. But then when they completely overlap, you know, your intuition strongly says that's, you know, more of them is now overlapping, you know?
Mm. And I think what's also interesting too is that if we get three spheres together, right?
Yes.
If two overlap slightly, then you have a ring. And then you have a third sphere, a third two sphere intersecting with that. Now you have 2 points that they intersect at.
Yes.
And if you add a fourth sphere, there's 1 point that they intersect at. And that, of course, is how GPS works. The three spheres are the how long it takes for a light to reach you from three different satellites. Yeah. And the fourth sphere is the Earth.
Yeah. Wow. Fascinating talk. Okay. So yeah, so that got pretty intense pretty quickly. And I don't think the conversation went much further than that discussion. Although there were questions in general, things like, you know, we talked about earlier, if we're talking about points and lines and things like that, and we talked about dimensionality, one of the questions was, if a line can be one dimensional, is a dot zero dimensional or is nothing zero dimensional? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and in this case, I'd say that dimensionality has to be attributed to something that exists.
Correct.
However, something can exist with no length or breadth, and that's called a point, you know?
Yes. There's an entire field of mathematics that we looked at for this episode called, what was it?
It's a nil dimensional space.
Nil dimensional space. And that's where some of these terms come from. And what does it say about like a single point that's a zero dimensional circle?
Yeah, the point can be visualized as a zero dimensional hyperball. And remember, a ball is like a filled in sphere.
Mm-hmm,
and right. You know, what's interesting though about the difference between a zero ball and a negative one sphere is that a zero ball is technically the inside of a negative one sphere.
Yes.
Or you could say that a negative one sphere is the outside of a zero ball. However, the measure of a zero ball is one because there's one point, so we just say one.
Yes.
However, the measure of a negative one sphere is zero. And I think the reason why is because there's nothing outside of a zero ball in zero dimensional space. There's room for exactly one thing.
Yes.
But the formulas just bear this out. And I just bring this up because it does speak to your point earlier that you'd had with your sixth graders on how zero and infinity are bedfellows.
Yes, absolutely. Now that's touched on a lot in the book called Zero, The Biography of a Dangerous Idea by Charles Scheef. That is on the favorite book list of many, many, many of my math professors in college. Again, that's Zero, The Biography of a Dangerous Idea by Charles Scheef. But also, I think a lot of the topics we touched on are involved in the book Flatland, which is the short story from when?
Like late 1800s, Victorian era.
Yeah. And they also talk about a single point where you have one occupant is that single point that is both the god and the only occupant at all and is only aware of himself.
Yeah, and it is really fascinating, all this stuff. There's so many things that could be done on infinities. We're definitely going to... This is not the end of our discussions on infinities. The end of these last two episodes. But, I mean, just the fact that you have these ways of talking about infinite numbers and also such that ordinal and cardinal versions are different, I think is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, and also, you know, just, oh gosh, and this also gets into trying to conceptualize things like derivatives and other aspects of math. Great conversation. So I guess if we were to conclude this episode, I recognize that it's very difficult to, you know, finalize these conversations, but I very much promote the Socratic seminar method in mathematics classes, science classes, and other classes as well.
And I do find it interesting, your thing of one of the points that I saw that you made, and is that that with your students, is that if you have two spheres of different sizes, like one is a little sphere like a tennis ball, and the other one is a really big sphere like one of those exercise balls.
Yeah.
Type size, do they have the same number of points or different number of points? And the reason why they have the same number of points is because you could have a latitude and longitude on each one, right?
Yes.
And each latitude and longitude can map to a unique latitude and longitude on the other one.
Correct.
So that function, the latitude and longitude function that transfers between the two, is both one-to-one and onto. It's both injective, yes, and surjective.
Yes.
And yeah, injective just means one-to-one, and surjective just means onto.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think I think it's fascinating, these infinities that happen outside of lists, these infinities that happen in the fibers between things. And,
yeah.
And I believe there are actually greater infinities than this one, but that's going to have to have its own episode if we talk about it. We've dealt with some of the weirdness of these concepts, as well as the math that goes into proving them. But one thing we hope you got out of our discussions of infinity is this. The term infinite is like the term etc. You have to know what you're talking about to be talking about anything at all. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Gabriel.
And this has been Breaking Math. Email us at breakingmathpodcast@gmail.com with any comments or questions. We love hearing from you. Poster, facebook.com/breakingmathpodcast. Click on store if you want it. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And we would love, you know, if you would love to support us, another way we said earlier is to go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/breakingmath. They're one of our sponsors, and they're a group that we're very proud to be teamed with because they're very educational as well.
I'm very happy that Breaking Math has been able to extend these kind of offers. And I mean that sincerely.
Till next time.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are,
and that's who we care about.
Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.